Welcome to the 12th episode of the Negative World Podcast, the official podcast for the Negative World community. And we are recording this on July 2nd. My name is Guillaume. I am the usual host and weak link of this podcast. And with me today, I have...
GameWizard65. My role name is Tom. I'll be discussing graphical styles of video games, cartoony styles versus more realistic styles.
I am Alaska Gamer. My real name is Brian, and my topic will be on Ocarina of Time 3D and remakes in general.
And I'm Paleo, and I'll be discussing sim games and how they can be used as tools for teaching science.
All right, cool. So, and we're actually going to start with my topic today, because... we've got new people to the podcast, and they're too shy to start, so I'm going to go ahead.
Plus, yours is the most relevant as of recent.
I guess so. We're going to be discussing Operation Rainfall, and if you have no idea what it is, then obviously you don't read the video game news sites. but yeah, like...
or visit Negative World.
All right. So, wow, where to start? I guess I should start by explaining what these games are. There's these games that came out in Japan pretty recently, Japanese RPGs. The first one, I guess, is Xenoblade. Xenoblade is this Monolith Soft-developed RPG. Monolith Soft is the studio that Nintendo bought at the end of last gen. They primarily make RPGs, and apparently Xenoblade, is really an interesting one. It takes place on the world is actually like the back of two giant gods who simultaneously killed each other, and basically you play as one nation who grew on like the back of one god, and you are being invaded by the population that's on the other dead god, and if that doesn't raise an eyebrow, I don't know what could. It's quite an interesting game, and it's
Japanese.
Well, yeah, definitely. I guess you can just guess that by the description. But it's also Japanese RPGs have had a rough time on consoles this gen. They don't seem to be localized as much. They don't seem to be selling as much. Final Fantasy XIII has been not well received by a lot of the fans and by much of the press.
I played it out of curiosity, and I didn't like it.
I enjoyed it, but one of the complaints that about it was that it completely forgot about exploration. You were on this rail the whole time, and you were just moving forward constantly, and like it was remarkably pretty, but it wasn't perhaps like the experience that RPG fans usually look for. And Xenoblade is the exact opposite of that. It rewards exploration. Like, you get experience points just by being in places that you're not supposed to be. And, like, it's got lots of little interesting ideas like that, you know? Like, people complain that RPGs don't progress, that Japanese RPGs have been stagnant. But like this is an example of one that is trying to do something different. There's also The Last Story, and if nothing else, that game has pedigree. It has been developed by Sakaguchi, the one of the creators of the Final Fantasy series,
and
Blue Dragon, which I've
also
played.
Lost Odyssey, wasn't it?
Yeah, and like people quite like that game.
Like they're from his studio, Mistwalker.
Right. And apparently, The Last Story is their best game yet, and it's quite interesting. It's got like real-time combat, and really, like it seems to be the anti-Final Fantasy again. You know, like people really disliked Final Fantasy XIII. Like I can't You can't understate that.
Has it been proven to be horribly linear as Final Fantasy XIII was?
Oh, I've got no idea. But just the, I don't know, just the fact that the combat system seems so involved, to me, probably differentiates it from Final Fantasy XIII, where you're basically on autopilot the whole time.
Mm.
And finally, there's this third game. I know less about it. It's this action RPG.
Pandora's Tower.
Pandora's Tower. And you're simply this guy trying to save this girl who's being turned into a demon, and in order to save her, or to stave off the transformation, you have to feed her the hearts of the monsters that you kill. So again, if that doesn't raise an eyebrow, I don't know what does.
Video games!
And like the point in common that these games have is that they're not coming to North America. They are not being localized for this market, and yet...
Yeah, keyword, like, not localized for North America, because like some of these have been confirmed to be coming to Europe as well.
Even like Pandora's Tower, which seems to be the most niche game, even that one has been playable at some event in France called... I can't remember, like, it's about Japanese culture, and supposedly, like, the rumors are that it's going to be localized in Europe as well. So, like, everyone seems to be getting these games, like Australia, Europe, even Africa, and, like, it's insane. Like, the only continent where you can't access these games is going to be North America. And some of our, well... Negative World is mostly formed of like the former posters and the Wii General Board on IGN, and our former neighbors, the Wii Lobby, have actually started this thing called Operation Rainfall, and it's this campaign that started, like, this Netroots campaign to have these games localized and published in North America. And, you know, they went through the usual process of, like, starting an online petition and a snail mail letter campaign that's supposed to debut in, like, this week, actually. Everyone is supposed to send their letter at the same time so that Nintendo of America is going to receive it around the 14th, I think.
I witnessed this whole thing grow, and I... for better or worse, said nothing to them about what I thought, which will probably make sense when we all pitch in on what
right.
we think of this whole dilemma.
And they haven't stopped there. They also went on the Amazon page for Monado, the old name that Nintendo of America chose back when it planned to release Xenoblade.
When all it was just a trailer at E3 on the show floor. It, like, 2 years ago, they didn't even show it at their press conference. It was just a random trailer they had playing in 2009, like, on the show floor.
Yeah, and I distinctly remember that the only screenshot we had available, like, I think there were only two, and one of them was, like, some guy standing in front of a fruit market.
Yes, so. and the fruit was all just a flat texture.
Yeah, like the game was not far along. And,
graphical assets being put to fantastic use.
But yeah, like back then, like no one really cared, I guess, and perhaps like nothing that makes Xenoblade special had been revealed then. And apparently it was being demoed in the little corner of E3, like no one really paid attention to it. For good reason, probably, back then. But now, like the game turns out to be kind of awesome and interesting, and we won these games here.
Yeah.
And,
it got like a 38 out of 40 in Famitsu magazine or something like that.
By all accounts, it's a very, very interesting game, and the reason why this uproar started only now is because I think there was always some sort of glimmer of hope that Nintendo would bring these games here.
Or people on the internet who thought their voice actually had some effect on the way things run.
Well, yeah, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I mean, like, when not a word of these games were said during E3, that's when, basically, like, Operation Rainfall formed up. And if nothing else, like, they managed to get something out of Nintendo. Because, like every time that, like, people ask, like, why aren't gaming journalists asking Nintendo about these games? Like, we want to know what's up. And the fact is that game journalists did ask Nintendo, but Nintendo would always deflect the question. So if nothing else, after all the, like, really fast campaign by Operation Rainfall, if nothing else, like, we did get an answer from Nintendo, and this answer came on their Facebook page. And it says, we promised an update, so here it is. We never say never, but we can confirm that there are no plans to bring these three games, Xenoblade, a.k.a. Monado, The Last Story, Pandora's Tower, to the Americas at this time. And there was, like, one last line in this Facebook update. Thanks so much for your passion and for being such great fans.
And the internet exploded with fury.
I told you, but you didn't believe me. Why didn't you believe me?
and that's where I feel even worse about it. I mean, I would have just come off as a jerk either way if I, like, during this whole thing, if I just busted into any of those threads and said, this isn't going to work, this is, like, this is basically just another form of the online petition. I have not seen a single case of an online petition making some sort of change in the video game industry or the way, like, a video game company runs things.
Well, the thing that causes, like, the outrage, well, first, like, it's not the most, I don't know, it's a very, very clumsy response. Like, you're just basically, like, these guys are begging you to release a game. Like, please sell these games to us. And the answer is no. Yeah.
And not only is it just no, but it's like they just took one of their stock PR responses and switched some words around because it just looks straight up, again, it's like just PR, just a public release statement. It's not just like someone at Nintendo who might talk like a normal person.
But that's also a bit, like, condescending, you know? Like, that's cute. No,
and that's
you know.
Just another reason, like, why PR or, like, just public statements from these big companies get such a bad rep.
Nintendo was so secretive, but, like, the best answer that they could have given would have been, like, some sort of explanation, right? Because of course, like, they've got a reason. They're not doing this just because they're jerks. Like, obviously, they made the calculations and decided, like, these games are not worth our time, or otherwise we would be getting them.
Yeah, the confusing thing is that, you know, they're releasing in Europe and they'll already be translated, so why not release them here?
Yeah.
Right.
Because there are English-speaking territories in Europe. It's not like us in North America have a completely unknown language that it's not worth translating.
Right, but there's also the fact that I think that any game that they're going to be bringing over here, they want to localize also for Canada and Mexico. They probably don't want to take, like, the tracks from Spain and the tracks from France and the tracks from, you know, Great Britain and just bring them over here without using American actors and all of that stuff. Still, like, just adapting translation, it's not that expensive. Once the brunt of the translation has been done, and all you have to do is basically get rid of, like, some of the expressions that don't really make sense in the particular country that you're bringing the game to, really, like, we're not talking about millions of dollars here. The work has already been done. Like, it will maybe cost a couple of thousands of dollars, and, like, it would be a great way to satisfy the fans, because the really puzzling thing, like, the thing that people can't understand, I think.
They would satisfy the fans, but again, like, if you, like, kind of, like, this question comes up when you look at it from the business side of things, is how much would those games actually sell here? Like, would those just be more ish games?
I'm not sure if it's actually that important how much it would sell when you consider the fact that Nintendo is not bringing anything. Like, nothing is being released on the Wii this year, basically, except for Zelda, Kirby, Rhythm Heaven. Like, how much will Rhythm Heaven actually sell?
And obviously, Rhythm Heaven obviously is not an entirely new game. It's, as far as I know, it's just...
Right, and it was not localized when it was shown at E3. Like, it was like a Japanese demo, so who knows? Maybe that's not even coming, but...
At least it definitely feels weak, like, for the Wii line of this holiday this year compared to, you know...
Last year.
Last year, we got, like, Kirby's Epic Yarn, Donkey Kong Country Returns, and before that, like Super Mario Galaxy 2, Metroid Other M, and personal favorite, Sin and Punishment 2.
Mm.
That's a lot more than what we're getting on the Wii this year.
Oh, absolutely. So, like, even if, like, they, like, I'm sure they would make some money out of releasing these games.
It still had to have been worth something to them to, if they decided to release Sin and Punishment 2 here, which I'm still more than grateful for.
Yeah, no, that was an amazing game. But actually, I can't remember exactly where I read this, so let's put it in the rumor box for now. But apparently, it's Nintendo of Japan that convinced, or that forced Nintendo of America to release Sin and Punishment 2 in this territory. And because like they saw that the game on the Virtual Console, the first game, sold 100,000 copies. And they thought, wow, that's going to translate into so much money if we, you know, for the sequel at retail. And it didn't really exactly work that way. People did not buy Sin and Punishment 2 in droves.
Which I'm very disappointed in those people. That game deserves a lot more.
I'm sorry. I didn't have money.
I mean, not only as a great game, but also as just the huge treasure fanboy that I am will just buy their stuff regardless.
Right, but I think that this incident, let's call it that way, probably gave Nintendo of America more power to refuse localizing certain games, you know, because, like, I'm not 100% certain. Like, I don't know Japanese culture that much, but I'm sure there was a little bit of shame to the fact that Nintendo of Japan insisted on bringing Sin and Punishment 2 here and it failed. And so Reggie or whoever like has the power at Nintendo of America probably has more of a say now in saying like yes or no, this is coming here, this is not coming here.
Right. Well, I mean, but seriously, can you base all that decision just off of, like, one game? And the thing, like I said, I really don't understand, like, how it all works.
I certainly hate it to be that way.
You know, I mean, you know, is it more Nintendo of America is saying, like, yes, we want these games, no, we don't? I mean, how much does, you know, Nintendo of Japan, how much do they, you know, do they push the games, you know, for Nintendo of America to release? You know, like, I really have no idea how all that works, to be honest. And like I said, it just seems kind of silly, especially for games, you know, like Xenoblade, which already had, you know, like, how much voice acting is in that game? I know you said they'd want, like, American voice actors, but, like, for me, it wouldn't bother me if the voice actors were English, you know, from Britain. I mean, I would still enjoy the game. That wouldn't be, like, a point that would make me not want to buy the game. I mean, as long as I can understand the language, or if there's like a lot of written text, even if it was in a different language, you know, I don't mind reading, you know, to get through the game.
It worked for Muramasa, where they just did not bother like making a dub. They just had the original voice, Japanese voices, and just said, here you go, here's some subtitles at the bottom. That worked plenty well for them.
Yeah, but Nintendo is probably a little bit different. They probably...
That wasn't even Nintendo Polish to begin with.
Yeah. But, like, what's confusing, like, I've read some quote recently about how Nintendo is looking at, like, sales of at least 1 million for the games that they publish, and if it's below that, it's not even worth bothering with. But I have to wonder how recent this policy is, because I'm pretty damn sure that they never expected Fire Emblem to sell 1 million on the Wii. And games like Battalion Wars probably haven't sold 1 million either.
Mm-mm.
Because of this decision, they're only releasing games for the very, very casual gamers, like in their Wii line of games.
They like already put out Wii Play Motion.
Yeah, Wii Play Motion and everything. And these games, sure, they can be good, but there's a certain, like, they will satisfy some people, but not...
Yeah, Skyward Sword's going to be awesome, for sure. It's a Zelda game.
Yeah, this is, like, the second group of games that they choose to release. Like, they're the ones, like, the big IPs that are sure to sell a certain amount. But, like, I don't think that you can please everyone with that. And people, in the meantime, like...
You can't please anyone with anything.
No, that's true. But, like, you can't release so few games and expect people to stick around. I mean, like, the Wii is threatened right now by the Xbox 360 and the Kinect.
Next year, Wii U will come out.
Yeah, but when?
It could be in the holiday. I'm expecting the holiday.
Yeah, the holiday is predictable at this point.
Yeah.
And what's going to carry them all through 2012, though? Like, what the hell's there going to be?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. 3DS stuff. Luigi's Mansion 2.
Catch up on my backlog or something.
You know,
they've released, like, two Wii games so far this year, in the last 6 months. Mario Sports Mix and Wii Play Motion.
I think I would feel better if they didn't say to us, like, it was some conference earlier this year where they said, you know, we're not going to say anything until the games are ready. But and then E3 comes around and they don't show us anything except for like Kirby that we you know didn't know that existed. Well, we actually kind of already knew about Kirby because of a trailer earlier, but still.
Yeah, again, it is a bummer that Nintendo basically just put out a pretty dumb response in regards to, are these games going to be localized? Are you going to do anything about them? But even before and even till now, I am not, like, super dying to play any of these games. Like, I mean...
Oh, I am.
I mean, like, I mean, like, so I mean, like the stuff that you described and things I had already heard of before, like, say for Pandora's Tower, I knew next to nothing about that. But, like, I am not, like, super desperate, like, for those games. Like, I've already got... You know, I'm not purely a Nintendo systems owner. I already have other avenues for games. But I'm probably just kind of more annoyed and kind of less interested in these games, if not for just how people are reacting in the worst ways to this. I'm sure, like, most of you probably don't, like, frequent the IGN Wii lobby as much as I do. I only really post in the community thread there, since that's the only sane place left. But, like, there's some crazy things, like some people, like, saying, oh, we should have, like, a picketing event outside of Nintendo of America's headquarters, because obviously our message did not get through hard enough. Or even, like, another one, apparently, like, some person, like, who put up a petition, which, again, made me realize, this is the same thing. If you keep acting in this way, like, no one's going to win at this point. Like, if you just keep acting like this, immature and whatever, and they finally respond, yes, all right, we will localize these games. Now shut up. It's just, at that point, I feel like this is coming up from someone who had listened to a couple episodes of the Hot Spots before the Gertzman exodus, where they would kind of, like, in some of their news, they would, like, pick out, like, some online petition pertaining to video games, and they would just dissect it and make fun of the people for making it, and rightfully so. Some of them were pretty dumb. But giving people on the internet the impression that they have a voice and that it somehow influences this whole business is right. Not really good, I feel.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it does influence the business quite a lot. I mean, because in Zero's article,
but how much so that it would seem like that they're basically making the decisions for a company?
Well, not like as big as that, but in Zero's article, he says that this goes a lot further back than just these three games.
Yeah, I know. I was excited and then bummed, excited to see that disaster Day of Crisis was still alive back in 2008, but then I was totally bummed when nothing about it coming to North America was said.
Yeah, I was going to buy that game.
If there was any legitimate reason for me to hate Reggie, it was for him basically shrugging off disaster Day of Crisis. Like, he was actually asked about that, and he said, it's basically on the line of, this game's crap, we're not bothering with it. And you know what? Maybe it was. I haven't looked at anything about it since then. But I remember that game looking totally interesting.
I don't know. I think what's crap to one person isn't crap to somebody else. I mean, I don't know. A game has to be really, really, really bad before I think, well, man, this game sucks. I mean, even games that usually maybe get 6, 7s, I don't know. A lot of times those are some of my favorite games. And I kind of agree with Alaska Gamer on, it's not like a big deal to me that if these games aren't coming out, but you would just think that Nintendo would want, like, a wide variety of games, you know, to entice more people to buy their systems. I just don't know how much it costs if they have to press so many of these games, if there's, like, a minimum amount, and if they don't even think, like, half of those would sell. And just like Guillaume was saying about, you know, there has to be at least 1 million copies sold. I don't know, like when I'm going on Wikipedia and different sites, it seems like only the biggest games sell over 1 million copies, that probably 80% of the games maybe you're lucky to sell 500,000 copies, something like that. So I don't know, I just don't buy all that, because you can publish a whole bunch of games and maybe only sell 250 to 500,000, but you think the combination of that, it would just be a win situation in the end for the company.
Yeah. And you know what, since, like, you know, like, Monolith is owned by Nintendo at this point, but the other two games, you know, those developers aren't owned by Nintendo. Nintendo's not going to publish them, just get some other publisher to localize them then. I mean,
well, actually, there's a like apparently Nintendo actively blocks people like other publishers from getting the games that they publish in Japan. Like the last time that someone published in North America a game that Nintendo had published in Japan was Polarium Advance Atlas published that here, and that was the last time that happened. And since then, we've heard about Fatal Frame not being able to come to North America because Nintendo just won't allow.
Again, another game around the time of Disaster Day of Crisis that was denied localization.
Right.
Well, isn't it true, even if the Nintendo doesn't publish a game, I mean, isn't it true that they still get X amount of dollars or something for every game that's sold, regardless?
Yeah, I was about to bring up the point. I mean, it's not like Nintendo doesn't have the money.
Yeah. I mean,
right,
yeah, like...
Exactly.
Like putting out those games in more territories would probably mean more overall sales.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact is, I think that this is not damaging to Nintendo just because of the money that they're losing, but also like the message
thinking,
at E3.
Thinking that somehow like this decision of theirs is like not good for Nintendo, they like don't underestimate them as a company. Like they know how to run a business.
I'm not so sure sometimes. I mean, like, the whole message at E3 was the Wii U is about you, the core gamer. We admit that we made mistakes with the Wii, that we seems like we forgot about you guys, but here are these hardcore games that you want.
And then, of course, Reggie's quip earlier by saying that you all want something new, yet you all want something the same, wider and deeper. We discovered that you guys are real jerks in what you demand.
But, I mean, like, there's, like, mixed messages here.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are rightfully, I think, now doubting Nintendo's commitment to go grab the core gamer, so to speak.
People have right to be angry about this. But of course, like, the way that some people in particular that I've seen, how they've reacted is obviously not the way to go.
But come on, like, let's not focus on the people who are overreacting.
Yeah,
I think that there's a lot of common sense.
That's just a lot more of, like, what I've seen, and kind of prevents me from getting into, like, some of those other threads, because they're all polluted by that stuff.
Well, I gotta say, I didn't expect to have a hater on my podcast tonight. I apologize.
I'm not hating.
Anyway, let's wrap this up.
Okay.
I just want to quickly say, first, like, the people who started this, Nikola Tesla and the Mighty Me on the Wii lobby had the right idea. And they do want to protest or, you know, to send a message to Nintendo, you know, in a respectful manner. And so I would suggest to everyone to go look up oprainfall.blogspot.com. That's the official blog for the movement. And they're also on Twitter, at oprainfall. So, or you can also go on the Wii lobby boards.
If you dare.
And IGN. But, yeah, there's a lot of noise there. I would suggest sticking to the official channels. Like, it's quite remarkable how every news outlet just picked up on the story, and, like, everyone is writing about it, and I wish them a whole lot of luck, especially if they can manage to get me the games that I want to play.
I'm not dying for them, but hey, if they by some small chance do come, cool.
All right. So, everyone, go sign the petitions, as futile you might think it is, and go pre-order the game on Amazon.
I'm not going to sign the petitions because I have no faith in them.
All right. And you say you're not a hater.
Okay, my topic is graphical presentation of games, like cartoony, more styled graphics compared to realistic graphics. And I mean, I'll just be straight honest. I mean, for the most part, if the games that I pick out are probably more on the cartoony side. That's not to say that I don't like realistic graphics. I'll go back to, like, the NES days. I remember when the Super Nintendo came out, it was like, oh, man, cool. Like, look at the, you know, the style of graphics and, like, how they change and, you know, over the course of the years. And
16-bit.
Exactly. And, you know, and, yeah, and, it, and when Nintendo 64
That's
came out, you know, we did
the bits.
But I don't know, like, games like, say, games like Call of Duty and, you know, like, I guess Halo is probably not a fair representation, but just the games
or any
that
Unreal Engine game,
right? I just for the most part, realistic graphics. That just it's just not something that I get into. It just I don't know. I guess I'm looking to escape reality and get into some type of fantasy world. And I think I can understand, like I see Nintendo's point when they didn't go with the HD and the real strong, powerful system, because most of their games that they published probably really doesn't need that, you know. I mean, like I said, it does. I don't need a game like Madden where I can see every vein on the guy's arms popping out and the sweat coming off of their brow. Like, that's just something that I don't know. I guess it's cool. Like, look what they can do nowadays, but that's just not something I don't get into that level of detail when I'm playing a game. And even like with the Final Fantasy games, I'll be honest, I never played any of the Final Fantasy games prior to Final Fantasy VII. That was my first Final Fantasy game, but I preferred those graphics or the style of the characters over, say, like Final Fantasy VIII, Final Fantasy X, and so on. I don't know, it's just, I can just get into those games a little bit more, and I just like the colors. That's, I mean, you know, I've always been that way. I just, it's just always been that way. I don't know, that's... What are your guys' points on viewpoints, like on your choice of games? Like, I'll be honest, like Resident Evil 4, that's probably, I loved all the Resident Evil games, but that game there, I can sit down now and just start playing. I've probably played through that game like 20-some times, and
yeah.
I just love it. But I'll be honest, I've never touched Resident Evil 5. I had an Xbox 360 for a while. My son has one. That's all he plays is a 360, and I just haven't had a desire to play it.
Right, but the graphical style between 4 and 5 is pretty much the same, isn't it? Except more detailed?
Well, it's just, like, shinier, new shades, and it's a bit brighter since, you know, it's a different setting.
RE5 is in Africa in the middle of daylight.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And, it's brighter.
Yeah, that's as far as the presentation goes. It's just a lot more of shading type textures, I guess.
I mean, like, and in regards to like the realistic side, it's almost like kind of false to even like refer to like most sort of games as realistic, because they are never truly realistic looking. You know, there's uncanny valley, like some sort of proportion issues and stuff, like trying to still make it in service of a video game.
Now, I'll be honest, that Silent Hill Shattered Memories, I really liked that game a lot. I was just kind of bummed out that there wasn't a little bit more to it. I ended up getting to that game like really fast, but the overall feel of the game, I mean, it was like really creepy, like listening to that, what was it, when you came up to certain items and you get to hear about, I guess it sounded like you're talking to like a walkie-talkie or telephone, and like
just like sound coming out of the Wii Remote speaker.
Right. Yeah, that was really cool. I mean, I really got into that. It was, you know, the whole thing. But like overall, it's just like I just love the cartoony graphics. That's, I don't know, it just really draws me into the game and helps me escape from reality. And I just like looking at all those colors. I've always been that way.
Would you like enjoy like something like Zack and Wiki a lot more?
Yeah, I mean, I like that game. Though I didn't really prefer to that style, that point and click.
Or was it too cutesy looking or something?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that. I think it was just more the style, the gameplay of that really didn't interest me. I mean, I didn't even finish that game. I made it about halfway through, and I just ended up getting bored of it. I mean, I know
okay,
a lot of...
But the The topic is like the art style. Like, would you say that it was like too cartoony? Or because I gotta admit, like, I like the point and click genre, but the style was a little bit too childish to my liking.
I could probably agree with that. That probably, I guess, I wouldn't say that it turned me off, but. You know, but I'll be honest, like on the same side, like on Kirby's Epic Yarn, I mean, I just loved that.
Oh, man,
even though it was easy, I mean,
it was just amazing.
It was just a thrill.
Kirby's Epic Yarn, along with Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, I say, are like two games whose art styles are, as far as I'm concerned, timeless.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those just look so good.
Oh, and as a matter of fact, like, people usually say that Wind Waker is the Zelda game that has aged the least. Like, it probably even looks better now than Twilight Princess did to many, many people because of the graphical style that they chose.
Yeah.
Like, it's very...
Yeah, timeless.
That is the problem, obviously, like, with when trying to strive for something that looks as realistic as possible, because you do that when new technology does come around and is able to render much higher quality textures, like, those old ones are going to look way extremely muddy.
Yeah.
Right. But, like, nowadays, though, like, with the graphic engines that have been developed, I mean, like, there's probably, like, people talk about diminishing returns now.
Yeah.
They say that the future consoles will not look as drastically better as, you know, the PlayStation 3 looks to the PlayStation 2.
Yeah. And, like, at best, in the next generation of consoles, most games, like, by standard, will run at 60 frames per second and have, like, some meaningful amount of anti-aliasing.
It's basically
stuff that PCs are already able to do now. I mean, my PC is not horribly expensive, yet I can get games that are on other consoles to look much, much better.
Right, but I think there's a difference. I think that people who expect the games to generally just run better on future consoles will be a bit disappointed, because I think that whenever developers have more power to work with, their ambition is also greater, and they're going to push other areas of the games more, you know? Like, you might not get a consistent 60 frames per second for your games, but you might get, like a field of view that's four times as large as anything you can get in GTA 4
right.
or something like
yeah.
that.
I mean, like, that's one thing I kind of admire about John Carmack, like, what he's been talking about with Rage, like, his next game, and what he has said before with his engine technology and other stuff. Like, he likes to make the games look good. Like, Rage looks pretty good as far as, you know, post-apocalyptic futures first-person shooters go, but, like he talks about how he definitely, like, wants performance. Like, he's talking about how he wants it to be 60 frames per second, and he doesn't really believe in all, like, fancy good graphical tricks and gimmicks, you know, like that's something that I do like. And he's kind of, like, said along the same lines as well about how there is diminishing returns, it seems like, with graphics right now.
Yeah, because I can go back and play games, you know, I was always kind of a graphics snob, but now with the virtual console and stuff, I go back and play NES games, Super Nintendo games. It's like, well, I'm just having as much fun, if not more fun, with these games than what I'm having with a lot more of the modern-type games. I mean, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, like Super Mario Galaxy 1 and 2, I mean, those games just... When I first played Super Mario Galaxy 1, I actually started getting tears in my eyes. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm a grown man, you know. It's just like, wow, this is... You just brought
playing
back
Galaxy,
so many memories.
Playing Galaxy 2, I felt like I was, like, 6 or 7 years old again when I was playing Super Mario 64.
Yeah, that was
like, amazing for me, but... And, you know, like, again, I guess going back to sort of, like, realistic-looking graphics and whatever, like that is obviously, like, some way to kind of push, like, how far graphics can go. I mean, you guys played or seen any of L.A. Noire?
I've seen it.
Like,
but it looks kind of weird.
Well, anyone who has like seen like the facial animations, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are incredible. But then, of course.
Yeah, but like, they don't fit with the rest of the body language.
Yeah, that's always that is obviously the problem. Like, it's these great, like, but it's like these facial animations that manage to, like, if you were just looking at the face itself, it overcomes the uncanny valley. But then you get to the animations, like, oh man, these are still video game people.
Right.
But even then, something like that is still, like, I mean, that's still, like, some sort of potential for making, like, I guess unless this technology that was used in L.A. Noire for the facial animation starts getting whored out or something, I guess even then it still makes it pretty incredible and kind of one of a kind and could last maybe for a while.
I don't know. Like, to me, it's very similar to these animated movies like The Polar Express.
Oh yeah.
You know, where Tom Hanks, like, you see Tom Hanks playing these roles, except that he's a computer-generated character, but it's obviously Tom Hanks' face. And did anyone actually like that? I mean,
it felt weird to me. They also did it with
Beowulf.
Yeah, and they
Beowulf was all CG.
Well, yeah, but the actors were, you know, like you could
motion
recognize
actor.
Angelina Jolie. Yeah, they were motion capture and everything, and their faces, except, I don't know, like, I did not especially like that style, and that's exactly what L.A. Noire is going after.
Right.
I mean, at that point, why don't you just, like, film the damn actors doing their stuff?
Yeah, they did that with, Mars Needs Moms, and that just looked really weird to me.
That movie was creepy.
I'll be honest, the Beowulf, I had no idea that
was all CG. But I guess, like, I guess in credit to, like, the facial animation in L.A. Noire is that it actually does kind of serve a sort of gameplay purpose, you know, because you're trying to interrogate those people and figure out, like, if they're telling the truth or they're telling half the truth or flat-out lying.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I said, it's not that I have anything against realistic games. I think a lot of it also has to do with when I end up reading reviews, people are just so nitpicky on games like that. It's like, it's a game. I mean, it's, you know, it doesn't need to look like real life. I don't know. I mean, you know, use your imagination a little bit. It's just, you just don't have to, it doesn't have to look like you're looking at, like, an actual movie. I mean.
Yeah, but of course, like, even the popular engines that are used to make, like, these sort of realistic-looking games are already, like, in a lot of respects, even if you're not, like, the biggest graphics whore or whatever, you can still kind of pick out, like, the obvious problems with them right now due to age. Like, Unreal Engine games with UE3. I mean, tons of texture pop in and character models that just look way super meaty.
Right, like, people were especially disappointed in the way that Batman Arkham Asylum looked.
Commissioner Gordon looks like he was taking steroids or something. Look at his muscle.
But like he had like an incredibly large chest in the Batman animated series as well. So it's always been like, I don't know, maybe he's drawn differently in the comics, but from what I know of Batman, like, he's always been like this, you know, incredibly buff guy. I guess the problem is that when you start getting more realistic than the Batman animated series was, it just looks goofy, you know.
Yeah.
Because, like, these are supposed to look like normal people, except that they're built like superheroes.
The Joker's frame in that game was pretty stylized, like, especially the head. Like, got that very, triangular, pointed chin of his. And this is the very skinny body.
Yeah, but he was basically the only one who didn't seem to follow the Gears of War template.
He was the one that most resembled a cartoon compared to everyone else in that game.
Yeah, everyone else looks like toy soldiers, you know, plasticky figures.
Killer Croc looks nothing like a croc.
Yeah, and that's another thing with these more realistic games. What is it with all the plasticky looking? Why does everybody have to have a shine?
And again, especially in the case of Unreal Engine 3, like, a lot of those games just have that sort of like weird shine to everything on it.
Apparently it's very easy to apply that effect, and so like
it's the kind of stuff that John Carmack would be against. Like, it's just that graphical detail, which really is not that important.
Right, it just becomes distracting when it's everywhere.
Yeah, it's like I'm back in 2005 when the Xbox 360 came out. Remember how glossy everything looked?
Ninja Gaiden.
Perfect Dark. It was all had that plastic look to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like about the point, realistic versus cartoony, it really depends on what you're trying to go for. I mean, I would not want cartoony graphics necessarily for a racing game. Yeah, like when you're in a racing game, you probably want the cars to be as realistic as possible.
Yeah.
You want to feel like you're in the actual machine on the actual tracks. Or like sometimes... You know, realistic doesn't have to be boring. There's this XBLA game called Toy Soldiers. It's this tower defense game, but, you know, with toys and, like, an actual room.
Hmm.
And the style is pretty realistic.
Like it's, like, realistic, but they're with toys? Realistic as in these are the sort of toy soldiers that you, that you're familiar with in real life.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, it doesn't look like Toy Story. It looks like... the actual toys in an actual world.
That's like a good use of realistic in that sense, because it is based on something that's, well, real.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, no, right. No, I'm not saying that. I'd want every single game to have a cartoony look, because like I said, I love Resident Evil 4, Eternal Darkness. I mean, that game is like one of my all-time favorites, and I know a lot of people are screaming for a sequel for that, but... I think it'd just be best to leave that game alone, because even if they came out with a sequel, probably wouldn't do the game justice.
They could probably just remake it just to see if there's still demand.
Mm-hmm. But
that's a popular thing to do these days.
Well, we can talk about that in your topic later.
I was hoping that would have been the segue, but whatever.
but that's even going, like, I know we're going to talk about Zelda Ocarina of Time. I mean, just playing out on my 3DS, even if it's not in 3D, I just love the fact that the frame rate is just so smooth now, and it just seems to make some of the bosses a little bit more difficult, because things are just moving a little bit quicker, and you got to be on your toes, and... You know, and like I just love what they've done with that game. It's just like, I'm just amazed with it. It's just like, I'd like to play it on the big screen too, but it's...
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I was already content with just plopping back in my N64 cartridge and just sticking with that, but, you know, they made it work without totally changing that game in terms of style.
All right. So, before we move on, like, what's our conclusion about graphical styles?
They both have their own purpose.
I suppose so. Personally, I just want to see less people just use the models that came prepackaged with the Unreal 3 engine.
Yeah.
or at least, if, like, when the next version of Unreal Engine comes out, hopefully it can avoid the sort of, like, familiar sort of trappings of Unreal Engine 3.
And on the Wii, like, personally, I think there's also a place for both styles. I mean, Pikmin would benefit greatly from a realistic style.
Yeah.
And there's also, like, even if the Wii can't handle games like GoldenEye as well as, like, the other machines would, it's still pretty cool to see, you know, the actual actor being used, like his face being used for the cutscenes and everything. Like, you probably wouldn't want a cartoon version just because it's on the Wii and just because a cartoon style seems to fit it better.
Right. Oh, no, I have that GoldenEye for the Wii. I mean, I haven't played it all the way through yet, but I really enjoy it compared to the N64 version. I think they did a great job with that.
I have nothing to say about GoldenEye for the Wii other than if anyone remembers my opinions about it before, they'll understand.
And I guess we can look up these opinions on Negative World.
Yeah. Just dig through, like, I don't know, maybe some GoldenEye thread or whatever.
All right. So I guess we're going to move on to your topic, finally. Brian.
Yay! Well, as game, well as GameWiz had mentioned earlier near the end of his topic, Ocarina of Time 3D. I had finished playing through everything that game had on Tuesday earlier this week. Played through the through the main quest and the master quest, and tried a little bit of the boss rush mode while I was at it. That game is fantastic, to say the least. And it's kind of crazy that I'm loving it as much as I am, because I own the original N64 game, and like the original N64 game. Like the one before they made the edits to like the music in the Fire Temple or the insignia on the mirror shield or turning Ganondorf's blood from red blood to green stuff. Which is, yeah, but even like, because I'm still gonna like own that cartridge just probably because of the value of, I guess, it being the unedited version. But everything about like the 3DS version was, it like, this is probably something that some people would probably have maybe problems with by saying it didn't change enough. But I say that's probably the best part about it, is that they hardly changed anything that was already in the original game. Like little things like the placement of items, like the map layout. Like it's almost like the exact same game, and that was just perfect. And yep. And you know, and it's already as a fantastic game, and likewise people are recognizing it as a fantastic game. Like lots of review sites giving it high scores, you know. Like even like as someone who frequents Giant Bomb, like the whole thing kind of got is sort of dismissed on previous Bombcasts because like some had already kind of gone a bit hard as all after Twilight Princess, but Giant Bomb's Brad Shoemaker gave it high scores and ended up really liking it after playing it. So it's still a great game even 13 years later, and really that should have been expected.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I agree with you. I'm glad that they just made it the same exact game and left everything the way it is. Just like I know when they were talking about the Final Fantasy VII remake, how people want that.
Yeah.
And if they did, I want it to be exactly like the other game, but just upgrade the graphics. Like, don't change anything.
Yeah. And of course, like, the additions that they did make, like the 3D effect, and obviously I did not use them, but those Sheikah stones that give you the hints for what you need to do next in the game. I mean, I obviously did not need to use them as someone who remembers just about everything there is in that game. You know, that was totally unobtrusive. And
did you try them though, just to see what they were like, to see what happened? I thought it was kind of cool how they did it a little fast forward and showed Link whatever it may be. I mean,
yeah, I did it once. I did it once, and like obviously that was is like, okay, yeah, I knew I already had to go to Kakariko Village. Thanks. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a fantastic game, keeps everything the same, but of course then there's the thing that I often see people kind of question about it. It's a remake. Remakes are kind of a thing this gen, putting out your old games for people who may not have experienced them before now to play. But
right.
Of course,
right.
That's not a new game. It's an old game being re-released. It's not, it's like, people like question whether or not resources are being put to good use by just re-releasing these old games with like just a new coat of paint on them. So, yeah. Yeah, Ocarina of Time 3, again, already established. It's a fantastic game, but again, it's a remake. And what do you guys think about remakes in general, really?
I don't mind them. I mean, my mom, she has a babysitting service, and kids aren't in school right now, and there's a couple young boys there that have the 3DSs. They're like around 9, 10, 11, 12, something in that age, and they both got have the game, but they had no idea, because I was telling them how I beat the game back in 98, and they had no idea that the game was an N64 game. They thought it was a brand new game.
Yeah.
I mean, they, you know, so, I mean, I can understand in a way where Nintendo's coming from. I guess I wouldn't want to see tons of games remade, but, you know, something like that.
Especially when, like, this game had already seen plenty of re-releases and was practically untouched. I mean, there was the original like Master Quest that was re-released as like a released as a pre-order disc with Wind Waker, and then they packed in with three other games as a collector's edition, like for some GameCube purchases, and of course they put it out on the Virtual Console on Wii. So it's already had plenty of re-releases, but this is like the latest one that seems to have the most significance of any kind.
Well, yeah, that's because it's a remake, not a re-release.
Yeah.
But how much of a remake, though? It seems that beyond like a little bit, like, you know, the visuals and the inventory, like not really a whole lot has been changed.
Well, yeah,
I could get pretty nitpicky about how, you know, like there are like some like different, like slightly altered animations that don't betray like the how characters moved and whatever in the original game, like, you know, At the start of the game, Mido, you know, the boss of the Kokiri, and just that big bully who teases you for not having a fairy. The jerk that prevents you from getting to the Great Deku Tree.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the 3D version, he has a new animation and stuff like that that kind of brings out his whole jerky snobby persona. Like, because like when he's like standing guard, he's almost like sort of hopping like with his feet back and forth, with like and his hands by his side, kind of leaned over. Is like that's what's great. That's like just great example of, you know, on top of what they did not change in general, like the big stuff. What they did change was just very tiny and added a nice bit of flavor to it. Like just did not. Completely ruin it or anything. Did not change. Like, this is not Mido. It's like, yes, this is totally Mido with this new, with these graphics and this system. You've been able to make him look like an even bigger jerk than he was before.
I didn't notice that. I guess I'll have to go pop in my N64 version and look. I just didn't notice it.
Yeah, I was tempted to pop in my original game just to check, but I trusted my memory well enough. Like, yeah, I am seeing these as differences.
The thing I wanted to say was, from what I've seen of Ocarina of Time 3D, I don't have a 3DS yet, so I can't really say anything. But from what I've seen of it, it doesn't look like the type of remake that Zero Mission was of the original Metroid.
Because
Zero Mission added a whole lot of different new things.
Yeah,
Zero Mission was basically a different game.
Yeah, it pretty much
was.
It was
the original game, like, just redone differently and added an epilogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it did not really play like the original game. I mean, like, it played more like Super Metroid. Like, I would say that it's completely different except for the basic scenario.
Yeah.
And
maybe, like, the locations. But even then, like, it's pretty hard to recognize the caverns of the first game and the remake. Like, there's so many more details.
Well, yeah, and when you compare, like, Zero Mission to, like, the very original Metroid, there's obviously a big difference in graphics.
Yeah.
So,
and also,
like,
the way you can play it.
And then, like, so they could have put all kinds of different details that were not possible on the NES. But yeah, like...
Yeah, but they didn't change just the graphics, though. They changed the design, basically.
Yeah.
That does kind of bring a point of how there have been other remakes of other games, but they did things that kind of changed the way those were played and even kind of broke them. Like Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes on GameCube. Like I played a little bit of that and like played through all the way of the original Metal Gear Solid, and much prefer the PlayStation 1 version on account of the cutscenes are not horribly drawn out, and in the case of...
They're not?
I'm sure that the PlayStation 1 did not have the power to process all of those long, convoluted acrobatics between Solid Snake and Gray Fox, like that Cyber Ninja or whatever. Like, they did not make it as totally crazy, like... Like, that was kind of the... If anything, like, the problem with Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes, they just took that scenario and tried to implement as much as they could of stuff that was introduced in Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, first-person aiming. Like from what I heard, like the first boss battle with Ocelot in Twin Snakes is super, super easy compared to the one in Metal Gear Solid for the PlayStation 1 because of that first person aiming. Like you don't have to run around the area trying to find him and aim at him from top down perspective. You can just whip into the first person view, and when he comes around the corner, just bam, shoot him in the head.
Right, but that's because they decided to implement features that were in the sequel, yeah. But they did not change the design around it.
Yeah,
like that's one of my biggest beefs with remakes personally. When they decide to change the design, or when they try to add something, I mean. I can understand that they're trying to add value there.
But the original game was obviously not made to accommodate those type of designs.
Yeah, like the original game was like complete, you know? It was like the game idea that they wanted to make. And then like when you add to that, you're introducing stuff that wasn't meant to be in there. And to me, like that's really not an improvement.
The original Metal Gear Solid's cutscenes were just long enough to not be a total like... Okay, guys, can you speed this up now?
But not just, like, cutscenes. I mean, my example would be, like, Chrono Trigger on the DS. Like, you've got bonus missions in the game towards the end. But, like, what made Chrono Trigger great for me was the pacing, which was just, like, perfect. Like, you could always progress at just the right... pace. I mean, like you were always like strong enough to defeat the monsters that were put in front of you, but you know, like you were never overpowering them. And then like they introduced these really, really bad additional missions at the end that are super drawn out. They do nothing but add battle after battle, and that's not really what Chrono Trigger was about. And all of that for items that you never needed in the original, so why would you need them in the remake, you know? And to me, like, that points to, like, the fact that these people who made the remake are not the same people who made the original game. So, like, this bonus content, like, what is it worth exactly? You're not really... it's not the vision of, like, the game's director anymore. It's, like, just stuff that's tacked on. And, like, if you were going to watch, like, a great classic movie and then, you know, like, it was re-released and, like, someone else just decided to add his own, like, scenes to it, like, you would notice.
George Lucas and you would feel like, to further destroy his original creations.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, like, even when it's the original... guy who made the original game and he decides to revisit it, like there's always the risk that he's going to mess it up, like just like George Lucas did with Star Wars.
And you know one thing I want to bring up, like it was Tom who brought it up about Final Fantasy VII, right?
Yep.
Yeah, like what you brought up about like how you wanted it to, how if they did remake it, you'd want it to be like the exact same as the original game was, just obviously with much better graphics. Like, I would agree, because, I mean, save for some things from what I've played of it, like, that I kind of personally have problems with. Yeah, like a lot of things that if they would have just changed, like if they did what Twin Snakes did with changing up the cutscenes for the worse, all Square would really have to do is just put in like some voice actors and probably lock out the Japanese voice track and make the English dub partially insufferable.
But Final Fantasy VII, the guy who made that game, is it Sakaguchi actually?
I'm pretty sure Sakaguchi was around when VII was made.
Okay. Anyway, I'm pretty sure I heard that the guy who made it is not even around at Square Enix anymore.
Yeah.
So, like, what's the point? Yeah. Like, you would have completely different people touching up the game, and, like, do you really want that? I don't. I'd rather have the original vision of the game, even if it looks bad by today's standards, than have, like, a spruced-up version that this decided to make better somehow, but didn't really... understand what made the original game good.
Yeah,
it's kind of also like the case of Chrono Cross, the sequel to Chrono Trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was not the same people involved, and it kind of showed because the strength. Like that game is not as terrible as some would have you believe, in my opinion. The like it has its own strength, but they're completely different from the strength of Chrono Trigger. And I wouldn't want those guys to remake Chrono Trigger and try to make it better and completely mess up what, in my opinion, was kind of a perfect game.
And but I guess one thing I can also bring up is like just a upcoming example of another remake that seems, from what I've at least heard, trying to basically do what Ocarina of Time did. I don't really care about the game. I kind of hate it, in fact. But Halo 1, you know, it's getting that 10th anniversary remake, which is obviously the definition of a remake. They're rebuilding it. They're obviously like updating the graphics to make it look acceptable and stuff. And apparently, I've heard that they've gone as far as to try and like get the same sort of stats physics and whatever from the first Halo and basically recreate that for this one. Like, they're not going to try and go, okay, we're gonna take the stuff that is currently up to date with Halo Reach and we're just going to build the Halo 1's campaign around that. Like, apparently from what I've heard, they're trying to make it, you know, as faithful to that original game. And again, I don't like it, but hey, I can understand and kind of respect them for even trying to dedicate themselves to making an exact replica of a game that some people tend to like. I don't.
Yeah, there's nothing that, you know, makes us buy these games anyway. Like, yeah. If we don't want them, we don't have to buy them.
We still have the originals to go to.
That's true, most of the time, except when we don't,
yeah.
I guess.
And that's kind of why, like, even then, like, I still prefer to, like, get the original game, like, in its original form. Like, I would much prefer to have that experience as it was originally made.
Yeah, that's part of why I want to get Chrono Trigger on the Virtual Console, because I want to experience as it originally was.
That's the great thing about the Virtual Console is that they are just re-releasing like these old ROMs like exactly the same, except in some cases like Wave Race 64, where they obviously lost the Kawasaki license.
Yeah, like it's extremely faithful to the original version, and so like people who were disappointed by maybe the new translation used for the Final Fantasy games and the GBA remakes can now play the version that they remember with like the lines that they remember, you know, like Shadow in Final Fantasy III being described as he'd slit his mama's throat for a nickel instead of whatever they replaced that line with. And so, like, that's pretty perfect. Like, as long as we have the option to go back to the original, I'm pretty okay, I guess, with remakes.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about, like, what Sony is doing? Like, they're releasing old franchises.
They're basically just up-res the ports of their old games.
Yeah, but they're up-resing them, but they're also putting them, like, all on one disc.
Yeah.
And, like, it's being sold for a pretty reasonable price.
Yeah, like, they did that first with the first two God of War games. Like, they put that all on one disc, and then they put all three Sly Cooper games on one disc, and they're... Later this year, they're going to be doing the same with Eco and Shadow Colossus, which I'm pretty excited to finally have an affordable way to play Eco, because I have never played that. I played Shadow of the Colossus. That's plenty available on Gamefly, but Eco, it's nowhere to be found.
Yeah, that's one of the great things, I think, about remakes. Like, personally, like, I always have the reflex of being annoyed by them, but then like when it's for something that I haven't played and I can't find anywhere, yeah, sure, I'll take
and,
them.
And
yeah.
for games that I've already played, like just out of obligation, like I did for Ocarina of Time, yeah, I'll play. I mean, it's still a great game. I've still played the original like year after year. I'll check out this new one, but I don't expect to get all super crazy about it yet. I ended up totally being super crazy about it. Like, in almost some way, I would almost think that I would make that my definitive version, almost. Again, circling back to how good Ocarina of Time 3D is, like, as it is, I guess it kind of goes to show just how it still get, even today, like, this new version is just getting high scores from everyone around the board. Just kind of goes to show, like, not only how faithful they kept to it, but also how almost timeless that design from 13 years ago is. Like, there's nothing about it that has, like, become less viable today than it would have been in 1998.
That's, right.
I find that incredible.
That boss mode, the rush mode, now is that after you completely beat the game? That opens up?
No. Actually, I was able to first get it when, so I think it was, like, after the Force Temple, and you return to the Temple of Time, where Sheik teaches you the prelude to life, to light, and allows you to go back in time. And Sheik tells you that you can go to your bed in Kokiri Village and basically, obviously in the context of the game, relive your greatest moments. But it's obviously just, hey, just go to a menu that lets you challenge all the bosses.
Right. Right. And that's from, that's what I read, that was from Link's bedroom, because I haven't made it that far in the game.
Yeah.
I've only been pretty much playing the game while I'm at work.
Yeah. So. Speaking of which, Link, what they did with Link's bed, like another great addition that totally does not break the game. Like it lets you go there to not only just, fight, the bosses again, but you can also rest there and completely refill your energy.
Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, that wasn't in the original, was it?
No.
So they made the game more accessible.
Well, yeah, and that also kind of shows when you're in the Water Temple and when you're inside the main tower where you play the Zelda's Lullaby to raise the water to the middle level, and the original game didn't do this as far as I know, but in this, when you play it and the water level rises, it reveals like a hole in the ground, which is basically their way of saying, hey, we know you overlooked this spot in the original game. Here it is, so you don't forget.
Well, I wanted to talk about sim games and how they could be used to teach science, because the other day I was talking to my friend, and I was amazed by his vocabulary. I mean, I had to look up stuff that he was saying. So, and I told him, how do you have such a diverse vocabulary? And he said, by playing RPGs, because he's been playing RPGs all his life.
Nice.
And I was thinking, I wonder what other game, if RPGs can do that for reading comprehension, I think that sim games could probably do that for science. Since in sim games, those are really the only games that you can actually experiment with different things, and you can find out how things work. Like in certain tycoon games, like with a Roller Coaster Tycoon, you can find out the physics of the coaster that you're building, and things like that. And I just wanted to talk about the different sim games and why some people just don't play them. I mean, they take a large learning curve, and they have very extensive tutorials that you need to do to actually enjoy them. So any of you guys play sim games?
No.
It's been a while, I gotta admit.
It's been years since I've played Flight Simulator, and that's the only one that I really had, I guess, most experience with, and that's not saying a whole lot.
And I basically played, like, one SimCity clone by LucasArts, and it wasn't really that good, Afterlife. But I've never played SimCity 2000, which was pretty much, like, the biggest one, right? I mean, it was, like, other after and before it, but that was the most popular one.
I remember playing a SimCity. I forget like which one it was. Might have been 2000. Was 2000 the one where you were able to, like, I don't know, like, plan out like the water pipe system and whatever?
I had 3,000.
Oh, 3,000. I think that's what it was. Yeah, like, I mean, yeah. Like, I could not, like, figure out how to properly set up those type of elaborate systems or whatever, even going through all the tutorials. It's like, I have no idea how to make this city the most functional thing possible. I have no idea where the best place to put the residential and industrial areas and water stuff, and stuff's complicated.
Yeah, it can get very complicated.
Yeah, I've never played any of the Sim games.
Well, there's like SimCity. There's a version that's on the Virtual Console. Actually, is that still worth playing?
Well, I don't know. I haven't played that one. But
the one with the cartoony Will Wright.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has
yeah.
a lot of Nintendo
it
references.
With the big green hair and
yeah, and like you can have like Bowser, I think, wrecking your city.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess like mostly like the sort of sim games that seem to interest me aren't necessarily like games that are simulations of real activities, like I don't know, Space Sims or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I would guess, like, XCOM, to an extent, could be something of a sim, because there's some pretty complex stuff. I'm assuming that would be the proper simulator to give to someone if we ever did face an actual alien invasion. And we needed an extraterrestrial combat unit. We would train those people with XCOM.
Yeah, and also, like, the whole economic simulation side of things. Like, you have to make sure you always have enough funds for your bases.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Like, especially the part with, like, XCOM, from what I've been able to see. Like, funds do kind of play a part into it with all, like, the research and troops and whatever.
Well, one game I recently downloaded off the Virtual Console is Sim Earth, and there
Never
is a lot of things on there that are extremely complicated.
And for Super NES?
Sim Earth, well, the version that they put on the Virtual Console was the TurboGrafx version, which was the one that was closest to the PC version. So that's why I put that one on there.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's just a whole bunch of different things. Like, you can control the water cycle, how much sunlight gets in, and, like, the geothermal activity, and
jeez.
All this different stuff.
It's crazy.
So, yeah.
So, it's basically a super advanced version of Lemonade Stand?
No, not really, because you're not dealing with money. You're dealing with, like, living things. And making them happy. Like,
Or crush their spirits.
Yeah.
As I always like to do, like in The Sims 2. Like, if anything that was, like, however twisted it may be, it was fun just to, like, trap a sim in a room and just watch it starve and die. I don't know, that's pretty cruel, but video games.
They're not real. Don't worry.
Yeah.
One of the things I was trying to do is that one of the goals is to have sentient life, and I had arthropods evolve, which are crustaceans, insects, and you know hard shelled animals with exoskeletons. And
this kind of seems like what Spore should have been.
Yeah, it's pretty much a proto version of Spore. But yeah, I had arthropods evolve, and they became sentient, and then they discovered fire, and then civilization collapsed. So, yeah.
Darn.
Wow, that sounds like fun, actually.
I might actually have to check that out. It might be the first TurboGrafx game I even, like, get, like, on my way. Like,
the thing is, though, is that the graphics are kind of hard to understand, because all you have is these little blocks. That
yeah.
show you like where water is and where like a population of animals are or plants, and it's just it takes a long while to get used to the controls because you're
Seems
not
like
sure
it's
what
for a proper
what,
remake.
Yeah, you're not sure what does what, and I've tried to read through the manual and I'm still confused.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing about these old games where there's a lot of icon-based menus and things like
there's
that. They just don't bother. Yeah, they don't bother explaining everything in game, and that's really something that's gotten better over the years.
I mean, like those old games are still incredibly in deep and can be fun once you get there. But obviously, like the path to cracking it is pretty hard. Like I still have not cracked XCOM, and I wanna like, learn a bit more about it, because it just seems so crazy.
I don't know if I can speak about sim games, in particular, but I'm reminded of a study that Roger Ebert mentioned when he was arguing that games cannot be art.
Oh, yes.
Time and everything. He pointed out, like, a study that showed that, you know, like, it monitored the brains of kids trying a new video game. And basically, like, there were all these flashes on the scan or whatever when the kid was learning how to play the game. But once the rules were understood, basically, like, the flashes stopped, like, the new connections or whatever weren't being formed anymore, and it was just, like, going through the motions,
yeah.
Basically.
Just doing the tasks given until you beat the game.
And, like, he seemed to take that as proof that games were worthless or something.
Wait, what?
His point was that that the people aren't learning the entire way through. They're only learning at the very beginning.
Yeah, basically, that, like, games were stimulating only at the beginning when you're learning, and then basically you're being more passive than you think. I don't know.
I wonder if that would be the same for sim games like Roller Coaster Tycoon, though, because you're always learning what works and what doesn't work for the progress of your park.
Yeah, you actually have to pay attention to all the little clues that you're getting. And
as far as I can tell, there's no, like, true, like, end goal to meet in any of those type of sim games. Like, really, like, the end goal is how far do you go and how far can you keep this business going or whatever until it all collapses, until you can't hold it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite games is playing Zoo Tycoon, and I can play that for hours just building exhibits and having more guests come in and just expanding until I run out of room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. So what, like, specifically do you think that sim games can teach someone? Obviously, they get you to learn how to manage your time, how to manage money, obviously, and basically how to plan. And I would say that those are very useful things, skills in life. But, what else did you have in mind when you came up with this topic, Paleo?
Well, one of the things I was thinking of, since I'm taking an environmental biology course right now, is, like, teaching people about the water cycle with rain and, you know, whatnot in the ground. And also chemistry and, you know, just trying to apply that to a game somehow, to where you can experiment with different things and, you know, find out the outcomes.
Right. So basically a chemistry set, but virtual?
Sort of. Yeah, something like that. And also, like, with biological things, with biological processes. I don't know, maybe like DNA transcription and translation.
All of this is flying over my head. I'm only still in high school. I finished a chemistry class this past year.
Well, another point I wanted to bring up is Animal Crossing. How many of you play Animal Crossing besides me and Dr. Fake on the forums?
I used to play.
Like, I started with City Folk. Like, that was the first one I played, but I realized that I could not keep up with it on a daily basis and could not keep going on a single town before it all fell apart, like, within a month.
Never touched it.
Mm. I mean, I like the idea, and even, like, the idea of the town still going even when you're not playing was cool, but it totally works against you when you're not there to, like, take care of pulling weeds and stuff.
Yeah, one point I wanted to bring up about Animal Crossing is that the museum in it, you know, actually has accurate information.
Yeah.
And you, that's part of
the stuff for the museum was fun.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest part of the games, and, you know, it's fun, and people actually learn something from doing it.
Paleo, do you have additional points that you wanted to make?
I was trying to say something about Sim Earth, because with Sim Earth, it involves a whole bunch of different things with chemistry, like astronomy, with the because asteroids can actually hit. You can turn these different knobs of, like, how often asteroids hit, how much volcanic activity there is, and you can, like, turn the different knobs and, like, you know, see how it's going to affect life, and you kind of experiment with it and, you know, see what works and see what doesn't work. So if they can apply that to, like, other or the various forms of sciences, then I think that would be something, you know, to look out for learning tools.
I think something just came to mind, like, again, like you going back to SimEarth and describing it a bit more. I think I just kind of thought of another thing that's kind of similar to that, but not exactly pertaining to, like, a life on, like, on an Earth or something. It's called Universal Sandbox. You ever heard of that?
No.
It's like a PC game. It was, like, on Steam. It was, like, featured in, like, in a Giant Bomb Quick Look. But it was basically kind of that same thing what you described with, like, adjusting different, you know, settings and stuff for this habitat and whatever. But it's all pertaining to space. So you can basically change things about the mass of celestial bodies and whatever. And of course, you can just – or – and this is probably just for fun, but like there's like a bunch just to make like a selected object blow up or whatever, and see how that affects the rest of the body surrounding it and the whole, you know, universe basically. Hmm. So I guess one thing I could teach is basically about space in a way, like how, you know, just how planets, moons, and whatever, how they behave.
Yeah, because we can't really see it. Within a second. It takes, you know, years and years and millions of years for these things to happen. So if we see it quickly, we can understand it a bit more.
Yeah, like that would be, like, very useful, especially since, you know, like, we're not obviously at a point where, like, going to space is something common. You know, that's obviously...
Yeah.
We're still on Earth, but I mean, something that kind of simulates like a space sort of environment and getting to manipulate that and see how space works, you know, how planets, how their orbits behave and interact with others. Like, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to look out for that game. I'll look on it.
If all else fails, just blow up. Just blow up everything. Just to see what happens. See what happens when you blow up the sun. Stuff gets messed up bad.
The whole story about, like, the gravitation and everything, like, that reminds me on the Nintendo World Report, like, the Jonathan Metz, the host of that podcast, he recently, like, he's a space nuts, and, like, he recently got his doctorate in,
astronomy?
Physics.
Astrophysics?
Well, yeah, apparently, like, he got a job, like, designing new space suits.
Dang.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was praising the you know, that WiiWare game Orbient.
Art Style Orbient. Huh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was saying that, like, that game, like, as basic as it is, actually teaches you something that's real, you know, about, like, the concepts of inertia and gravitation and everything.
That again. That was a good game.
Yeah, it is. And I was kind of surprised, you know, because, like, the game is 2D, it's played with, like, two buttons, and, you know, there doesn't seem to be that much to it. But apparently, like, those were concepts that he saw in his courses, you know, and probably it says more to people like us to be playing this. And, you know, like, we probably understand these concepts better when we're playing that game than if we were just looking at a mathematical equation.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, like, even just, you know, like, hearing about, and probably not exactly pertaining to, like, teaching a particular subject, but, like, when I learned a bit about, like, how genetics worked in, I guess, like, something, even if it doesn't teach you the exact concepts, like, even if it's introduced in video games, like, it does make you kind of recognize it in real life, like, met the original Metal Gear Solid, and when I was in biology and learning a bit about genetics and whatever, like, that kind of made me think back to Metal Gear Solid, if only on the basic connection that Solid Snake and Liquid Snake were clones, and genetics were involved in that. So,
right.
So yeah, just like those sort of loose kind of connections, even then, can, like, if it's introduced in a video game, it makes me a bit more interested to know about the whole thing in real life.
Thank you.
Thanks guys for being here, Paleo, Game Wizard, and Alaska Gamer.
Nope.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to remind people that to visit us on negativeworld.org. That's where you can find you can find tons of things, but mostly. If you want to comment, it's the best place to comment on what you've just listened to. Just find the thread that's associated to this podcast and leave your comments there. If you don't feel like subscribing to Negative the World, and quite frankly, I don't get that, but whatever, you can always leave your comments on the Facebook page. Just look for Negative World on Facebook. Or you can send a comment on Twitter. Negative_world on Twitter. And, Paleo, why don't you tell us where else that we can find the stuff that you write or post?
On PK Gaming, you can actually find the Negative World podcast on there, since I don't do the PK Gaming podcast anymore. So you can find it there, and you can also find a bunch of other articles related to stuff at Negative World, and, mostly Nintendo-focused. So, and that's at pkgaming.org.
And I wanted to, this is not something that I do usually, but I wanted to call out, a couple of the stuff that you can find on the Negative World, the stuff that you don't need to subscribe to be able to read. There is, recently an open letter to Nintendo where Zero, the site owner, makes it's his editorial about the whole Xenoblade situation, and it's been picked up by Go Nintendo and by a couple of other sites, and it's pretty interesting. If you want a well-rounded view of exactly what it is that the fans want, I would suggest reading that. We've also got a whole bunch of news, and we've got a review for a couple of DSiWare games, some DS games, and some eShop games. So definitely look for that. And there's also a whole bunch of top tens written by Sir Master Sephiroth, and those are pretty fun. There's always a ton of interesting trivia about the games that he posts about, and I guarantee that you're going to learn something. And there's also, I want to call out the top 10 weird things about Nintendo's white knuckle scoring. That article has been picked up by a whole bunch of sites, and it's definitely our most read article so far.
Again,
and it's really,
again,
really good.
Chris Wright, thank you for making that article and inadvertently getting me back to Negative World.
It's pretty amazing. It's something that you, right out of cracked.com. It's really hilarious, and I definitely encourage checking that out.
When you read it, ignorance is bliss will make much more sense.
All right. So thanks again, guys, for being here.
Yeah,
my pleasure.
I would definitely not be able to do this without you guys. And thanks for listeners for listening. Definitely is more interesting to be doing this podcast when you know that, it's getting to someone.
Otherwise, that's sad.
Indeed. But there's over 100 people listening, and that's pretty cool, I gotta say.
Yep.
Thanks, everyone, and see you in 2 weeks for episode 13.
Woo!
Alright, cool.
So, thanks for, how do I do these things again?
It's the 12th episode.
Getting older.
We'd expect you to get it right this time.